Today on Rambling About Cars, the Save the Manuals crowd gets a win with a new Porsche 911 Sport Classic. There's no manual in the new Mercedes AMG C43, though. And what else we have? A Corvette that's electric or hybrid or both. That's finally been confirmed. Nissan Z may be delayed. We don't know. But what you really want to listen for...
We know it's delayed.
what you really want to listen for is the fabulous summertime cheap car challenge we have coming up later. The used car market has changed, folks. So without further ado, it's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Mr. Chris Bruce is across the way, and it's just us today.
Yep, it's just you and I. I think next week, if I'm not mistaken, we have a guest. But this week, it's just you and I. It's two guys talking about cars, fun stuff that people who started listening from the beginning enjoy. And
right,
let's kick that off with talk about the Chevrolet Corvette Hybrid is officially, finally confirmed. It's been rumored for ages now.
Ever.
Years. Yeah. But now we know it's coming because they put out an official teaser for it.
And what was interesting to me, that was from GM president Mark Russ, and it came on LinkedIn, right? Did it originate anywhere else, or was it straight from LinkedIn?
Well, they put the teaser video on YouTube, so it was also there. If you're watching right now, you can see the teaser video. And you can see, as you're watching there, the front wheel drive, the front wheels are spinning. So it definitely has all-wheel drive.
It's not just electric, folks. It's all-wheel drive.
Yeah. So, yeah, Royce posted it on LinkedIn, but they also put out this video that if you're watching on YouTube, or if you're watching on YouTube, it was on YouTube. Sorry.
And if you're not, go to Motor One Podcast and follow us there where you can see everything that we're talking about. If not, you can also go to MotorOne.com. We have our articles. We have articles on everything we're going to be talking about here today, except the cheap car challenge at the end. But that's why you want to come follow us at Motor One Podcast. And yeah, Corvette, it's like the worst kept secret for like the last year and a half.
Well, I guess we don't know what it's called yet. I was doing some research as we were kind of getting ready for this. We've heard it's called the E-Ray, and we've also heard that it's called the Grand Sport. I think if I were a betting man from what we've heard, I think E-Ray is the more likely moniker, but I'm not going to. Grand Sport obviously has a long history with Corvette, so it could be that, but I'm expecting E-Ray, but regardless, it's the new model to fit in that slot.
Mm-hmm. And what we've heard. Go ahead. Oh, because I'm excited about this one. I can't wait for an electric Corvette.
Output is going to be somewhere between 600 and 650 horsepower. That would put it just below the Z06. If you've been listening to Rambling About Cars for a while, you've heard us talk about this before, that they have this whole kind of lineup of Corvettes coming. I've got the link pulled up and we'll kind of talk about that here at the end. But so it's the new Z06, I believe, is 660. So if this is 650, it's a bit less than that. And also with the electric components, we can expect that it's going to weigh a bit more than a Z06, but it's going to be the first ever all-wheel drive Corvette, which is its own special thing. So, you know, it's got things to grab headlines as well.
Right. I mean, you don't want to think of this in terms of, okay, the Corvette progression is going to get progressively more powerful as we go down the line. If I remember correctly, and I don't have the article pulled up in front of me, Bruce, so you've got me beat there. So I'm going by memory here, and we all know how notoriously bad my memory is. You're going in stages, and the post that we that Bruce is talking about, if I remember correctly, it had the E-Ray coming after Z06, and they were talking about E-Ray being a replacement for Grand Sport in the lineup, because the previous generation, you obviously had, you had the standard Corvette, you had the Z06, you had the Grand Sport, and then you had the ZR1. E-Ray kind of makes sense to me for a new name, since it's going to be the first electrified Corvette. That's going to be a hybrid, and it makes sense to have that name. I mean, they could call it Grand Sport. We don't know for sure, but going by that original post, the information we had that had been leaked previously ended up being correct. The Z06
regarding
information.
The Z06, yeah.
Yep. yep, that ended up being spot on. So, I mean, there's reason to believe that, okay, that time frame and the information there could be accurate, but we don't know for sure. And
just to clarify for people, if you're not watching on YouTube here, so the rumor was Z06 in 2022. That obviously happened. Mm-hmm. E-Ray / Grand Sport, whatever they end up calling it, that would come in 2023, and that would be your hybrid Corvette that we're seeing here. And by 2023, I mean actually go on sale in 2023. So they're obviously teasing it now. That probably means that we're going to actually like see it before the end of the year, but I don't expect sales to happen before the end of the year. So it's probably going to be 2023 when you can actually buy one. And then the rumor is the new ZR1 would take the engine out of the Z06, swap on a pair of turbochargers into it, and make, the rumor is, 850 horsepower. And then the big dog 2025 is what would be called the Zora, named after the father of the Corvette, Zora Duntov. And that would be twin turbocharged plus hybrid to make around 1,000 horsepower. So we don't know about that, all of that yet, but every bit of this timeline we've seen so far has been accurate.
However,
so it's been one, you know, you have to wonder, like, is it going to continue to be accurate?
Right. Of course, we have to keep in mind, I mean, that information is now, what, over a year old, Bruce? If I'm not mistaken.
Ordering on 2 years, maybe.
Yeah, so
March,
I mean,
2021. So, yeah, over a year
old. So, a little bit over a year old. Obviously, a lot of things have changed in the automotive industry since then. Of course, the time frame could very, very well be off. We'll see how it pans out. We at least now have official confirmation that, yes, electrified Corvette is coming. Now, the announcement, I mean, it was talking about hybrid, but did it also not mention a fully electric Corvette? Because that's something we haven't heard of yet.
There have been, like, little rumors here and there, but, yeah, it's... Yeah. So according to the story that I believe Anthony wrote, this will not be the only electrified Corvette, that there's maybe something coming in the future. Maybe it's going to, if I'm being honest, we don't know, okay. You know, it's pure speculation at this point, whether or not there's going to be a fully electric Corvette for the C8 generation. I would say, just looking at my crystal ball down the line, would there be a fully electric Corvette? Probably. For the C8, we don't quite know yet, but we know there's going to be a hybrid. Mm-hmm. I can promise you that, but yeah.
I mean, big news, obviously, in the Corvette world.
Totally.
I know.
And first all-wheel drive Corvette. That's a thing as well, that, like, you know, this is a Corvette, theoretically speaking, you throw some snow tires on. It's a Corvette you could, you know, drive in the snow and not be nervous or anything like that. Conceivably, right?
I mean, conceivably. I don't think all-wheel drive in this instance is going to be an encouragement for Corvette buyers to drive it all year.
That's true.
Round, but I mean, obviously, everything is going towards electrification. I know there are still people that are upset that the Corvette is even mid-engine. Never mind going hybrid. So.
Well,
you know, the times are changing and evolving. I'm very excited to see a hybrid Corvette. Very excited to see a fully electric Corvette. The power of electricity is, I mean, it's, you can't argue against it. It seems like, you know, every time somebody tries to come up with an argument saying why it's worse, it always comes back to the same thing. Well, it sounds like a washing machine. You're listening to something on the stereo anyways. I mean, I have a loud V8 in my garage. I like the sound of engines as much as anybody, but I'm not going to let that take away from my enjoyment of electric cars in the future. So bring it on, Chevrolet.
Also, how many thousands of Corvettes exist? If you don't want an electric Corvette, don't buy one. Go buy a C1, a C2, a C3, a C4, a C5, a C6, a C7, or a C8. And I don't know. Even the C9 could have a combustion engine in it. We don't know anything about it yet, but, like, there's plenty of options out there. If you don't want that electric sound, don't buy one. It's
right.
They're readily available.
Right. At least now we know, we have definitive confirmation that yes, it's coming. So we'll just stay frosty and see what happens there.
Totally.
Let's move on to something that is here right now. Do you want to talk, Bruce, about the new AMG C43 or the new Porsche 911 Sport Classic?
I am. Let's do C43 because I am confused by this car for a few reasons.
Okay. Why is that? Well, first of all, while you're popping that up, let me just tell everybody, okay, the Mercedes-AMG C43 debuted here this week. It's the first AMG-ified version of the new C-Class that's out, the C43. I hesitate to call it the entry-level AMG C-Class.
No, that's fair. That's what it is, but
we're still talking about a really nice sports sedan that makes 402 horsepower.
Yeah.
It's got the 9-speed transmission. It's got all-wheel drive. It's got 4-piston brakes up front. That but engine,
let's talk about
it's
the 2-liter. That's what's gonna.
It's the 2-liter turbo 4, and I know it's kind of like what we were just talking about with Corvette, right? AMG has to have a V8. Well, you know what? This engine is making 402 horsepower. It has an overboost function that'll add 13 extra horsepower if you need a little more gumption. 369 pound-feet of torque. It'll do 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds. It's electronically limited to 155 miles an hour. It is not a slow car, and I think it has a very nice AMG upgrade to the look. Obviously, less chrome, more black. The C63, when it comes out later, is going to have a more aggressive front fascia. It'll have slightly different styling at the back. This is, and I hate to say it again, the entry AMG here, but
I don't think that's damning it with faint praise. It's
a nice car. The previous C43 was 385 horsepower with its twin turbo V6 engine. So you're getting a smaller engine with a little bit more power. I'm on board with it. I like it.
So here's what confuses me about it. And readers, chime in. Tell me if I'm wrong here. So this actually uses the same 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder. It uses an electrically assisted turbocharger. Sorry, that we just saw in the SL 43 that we talked about a few weeks ago. And what confuses me here is, so like Smith was saying, it makes 402 horsepower, 369 pound-feet of torque in this application. You go over to the SL43, though, that is in essence the same engine, the same. It has all the same features. It has 381 horsepower and 354 pound-feet of torque. And the SL is usually supposed to be like Mercedes' flagship product. So I don't understand why the C-Class makes more power than the SL.
I got nothing for you other than to say, okay, I mean, we're talking about different categories of vehicles here.
But you would expect that's buying the SL. Like, that's the SL class Mercedes is like, the SL, like, you know, you go back SL 300s, you go back decades and decades. Why is it making less power than the C43?
I mean, I guess I would say Mercedes has a pretty good idea of their customers for the SL and the C-Class. I imagine they would sell more of the C43s than they're going to sell the SL 43s. So, hey, we'll make the C43 a little more interesting, a little more exciting for those who either don't want or can't afford the C63. Meanwhile, over in SL land, the people are most likely going to be going for the SL63. We'll offer the SL43 for those who maybe just want the experience and don't want to have so much power under their foot. I mean, we have no idea on this.
No,
that would be my
it was weird to me because
that would be my same engine. That would be my logical conclusion.
Yeah, I think that's entirely because
we're seeing that same engine in quite a few Mercedes vehicles at different power points. So I mean it's going to be tuned for whatever application Mercedes feels it's best suited for. Right. That's my conclusion. They're going to sell more of the C-Class cars than they're going to sell the SL. So give it a little bit more juice to entice a few more people and then make them want the C63 when it comes out later. But I mean, I think,
sure.
I mean, I think it's a good looking car.
I do too.
I think it's a
handsome car
of performance sedans you can get right now. I would be taking Mercedes over anything from BMW or Audi.
I totally agree. BMW is in a weird spot design wise. Mm-hmm. Audi is investing heavily, it seems, in their EVs and this is, again, my total personal opinion. It seems like their combustion vehicles are kind of falling by the wayside because of that. And, you know, that would be understandable that, you know, you can only have a finite amount of money and you have to put that money in certain places. So, yeah, if I were looking at a vehicle in this class, the Mercedes is probably where I would look.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we have pricing on this yet, correct? I think that's going to come at a later date, right?
The other thing that's worth mentioning, and sadly, this is not for us, or Smith and I, but in Europe, you will be able to get the C43 as a wagon.
Oh, yes.
I clicked the wrong button there, so
give me that announcement second. Came shortly. Actually, it came shortly after the C43 sedan announcement.
Yeah.
And I mean, who doesn't like a fast estate? I know a lot of people in the United States, I guess, don't really get it. It's SUVs and crossovers. Hey, and that's fine too. It's been said before. It seems like automotive journalists are required to like station wagons in a format. I've always just liked the combination of space and, you know, a car like drive, something that sits lower to the ground.
That's exactly what I was. It's the fact that you get the space advantages of a crossover. You know, you think about something like a GLC or something like that. You get the hatchback room of the extended roof and stuff like that, but you still get the driving manners of a car. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of car enthusiasts, auto writers, people like us, that we enjoy that kind of tossable nature that comes from a car, rather than, you know, whenever you start raising the ride height, you start raising centers of gravity, and it becomes a bit more difficult. You know, handling is never going to be quite the same in Bigfoot, the off-roader, than it is in a Lotus Elise or something like that. And so that's what draws us to the wagon, that it's, you know, you get that extra cargo room, but you don't have the compromise of, you know, the extra ride height and tossing it around and stuff like that.
And, you know, I'm also going to take something of a vanity point here. There are so many crossovers and SUVs on the road now. A wagon stands out, and I'll be the first to admit, I don't mind standing out a little bit when I'm out and about driving. Sometimes I don't want to, but most of the time I kind of do. And I always take note when I see a pretty cool wagon nearby. I'm sure everybody else on the road that are just out there driving because they have to, they don't give a rip. So we're in the minority. I know that, but that's all right.
Of course.
I think that's a cool looking wagon.
Yeah, totally. Reaches 62 in 4.7 seconds, which is only a tenth of a second more than the sedan. So you're not really giving up any performance wise in terms of a straight line. And you get that extra cargo space. So, hey, if you're in Europe and you have, you know, a couple of kids and you need to throw, you know, whatever cargo in the back for them, or you got a dog or whatever, like, you know, I'd be hard pressed not to pick the wagon over the sedan, but we're not getting it here, so it's a moot point for us.
That it is. And let's move on to the Porsche, because that just debuted today. Actually, it debuted as we're recording. It debuted
an hour ago,
like an hour and a half ago. So as you're listening on Friday or afterwards, this has been out for a little bit. But I think this is just a fantastic addition to the 911 line. It's the Porsche 911 Sport Classic. We've seen spy photos of the car running around for quite a while. It's got that ducktail spoiler on the back. And the thing is, leading up to this, I think most people thought, okay, it'll be a version of the Carrera with the Carrera's engine, maybe tweaked a little bit.
Well, the speculation was that it was going to be a Carrera GTS with kind of the ducktail spoiler and the different roof and
stuff like that. No, it's basically a detuned 911 Turbo S. The foundation for the car is the 911 Turbo S. It has the 3.7 liter twin turbo six cylinder from the Turbo S, but it is detuned. Those
wheels look so good.
It is detuned here. We'll get to the wheels in a second, Bruce. We got to talk about
For YouTube watchers, we're going through the images and the close up of the wheels came.
It's a good looking car all around. I was fortunate enough to actually be on a media roundtable with Porsche on this a while ago to get some of the details. I'm really excited about it. 543 horsepower. It's a detuned version of the engine. It's detuned primarily so they can match it up with a 7-speed manual transmission. This is the most powerful manual transmission Porsche you can get right now. And all that power goes to the rear wheels. So it's very much an analog supercar, really, in a digital world. That's really the best way to describe it. There is no option for an automatic. There is no option for all-wheel drive. If you're going to get a Sport Classic, you're going to get 543 horsepower. You're going to shift it with three pedals, and all that power is going to go to the rear wheels. Now, because it is based on the Turbo S, you're also getting like the Turbo S goodies, like the ceramic brakes, the dynamic chassis control, rear axle steering, the Sport Chrono package, active suspension management. You're still getting all of that stuff. But Porsche was very keen to say this is not like a track attack machine. It's designed to be an on-road, comfortable driver's car that's still very, very exciting. And I imagine with a manual and that much horsepower in a rear-engine Porsche, I mean, they call it, and I allude to this in the article that that you can catch at MotorOne.com, they call it the Sport Classic. Obviously, the exterior has all kinds of design cues of Porsche's past. It's got the double bubble roof that was on the 997 Porsche Classic, the Sport Classic. The ducktail spoiler obviously calls back to the 70s Carrera RS, the 2.7. Badges all over the car. They call back to some of them go all the way back to the 50s and the 60s. Some of the badge designs there. Obviously, the stripes are special to the car. There's a special shade of gray that's exclusive. They made it just for the Sport Classic here. But I mean, also, you have that much power. You have a manual transmission and rear wheel drive only. I feel like that's a fairly significant part of this particular Sport Classic. It's going to offer, I think, an experience that maybe folks haven't seen in a while in a Porsche. I mean, what do you think on that, Bruce?
I love this. Like, so for anyone who hasn't listened, 911 SC / 911 G50, something like that, is my dream car. So basically, a 911 from the 80s. And this, you know, there's a lot of 70s cues here, but this thing is just fantastic. It looks so good. So I wanted to bring this up. I paused this picture on purpose. I love this combination of leather seats and fabric with the checker mark in the middle.
That's a homage to the late 60s, early 70s design with the cloth inserts in the seats. Porsche says I can't remember the name of the specific leather, but it's a softer, supple leather. They haven't used it since the Porsche 918 Spyder. It's the first time it's back in a Porsche since the 918 Spyder.
It just looks so good. Did they mention whether there are any of these available? Not that I'm buying one, but I the only reason I ask is because when the previous generation Sport Classic came out in 2010, they were all sold by the time they debuted the vehicle. So I was curious whether, if there is some very well-heeled listener to rambling about cars, can they get one of these, or is it just too late?
Porsche hasn't mentioned anything regarding price or exactly when orders might be taken. They did say that it'll be in dealers later this year. There are 1,250 planned for production. Let me just double check my numbers.
That's pretty good. So
1,250 globally. And it is coming to the United States this time. The previous Sport Classic was not offered in the United States.
Exactly.
This one will be.
The previous generation, which I'm sorry, I thought it was from 2010. It debuted in 2009. They only made 250 of those. And so if you're looking on YouTube, you can see it here. And it's very much a similar recipe. You've got the stripes, you've got the classic style wheels, you've got the really cool looking interior. Like, you know, they don't make one of these sport classics very often, but when they do, Porsche, this is not just some, like, you know, stripes and special color and stuff like that special right. edition. They really kind of pull out the stops for these cars. So
and actually it's deeper than most people know, because on the new 911 Sport Classic, okay, it's based on the Turbo S. It has the Turbo S engine in the back. Well, what's missing on the Sport Classic, the side vents, the back of, you know, in front of the rear and wheels,
the fenders, rear fenders.
To help channel air back there. Porsche actually retooled their machines and stamped out rear fenders specifically for the Sport Classic because they wanted that smoother look, but they used the Turbo S body because they also wanted that kind of proper wide body look, but they wanted it nice and smooth. So they actually stamped out special rear fenders for the Sport Classic. They were pretty proud about that, and they should be, because I think it looks fantastic. And because the engine is a bit detuned, they don't need quite as much air going back there, but they also did quite a bit of engineering, just reshaping some of the air ducts around the car. That ducktail spoiler has ducts in it to help funnel air. So, I mean, it's much more complicated underneath than it looks. I mean, they didn't just,
especially for a car that they're making so few of,
right.
That, you know, it's funny, you know, they're not making many of these, but they really took the time to make it something special. Which is cool.
The double bubble roof.
Plastic
reinforced carbon fiber. The hood is the same thing. You can't get that on a 911 turbo. The wheels, obviously, the Fuchs style wheels, 21 inches in back, 20 inches in front, with a center lock on it as opposed to standard lugs. Yeah, it's, I mean, they did a lot on this car to make it special. And I
got to ask you a question. So if you're watching on YouTube, you're looking at the interior now, which is that classic white and black check upholstery pattern. I think it's time that and this shouldn't be like a wide production thing. Are you familiar with Porsche's Pasha, P-A-S-H-A style interior from the early 80s? Have you seen that before?
Bruce, I think you need to school me on this one.
Okay. So this is the Porsche Pasha interior. I think it's time to make a comeback. I was looking these cars up recently, like a week ago. This was available on the 924, the 928. And I only learned this today because the image that we are looking at is from a 911 Targa. Apparently it was available on the 911 Targa and is this extreme checker pattern on those cars.
It's a black and white checker pattern for the inset and the headrest with what looks like just black leather on the
leather bolsters. And it's a very kind of classic Porsche look. It's something they haven't done since the early 80s, and after seeing the interior of that new Sport Classic, I feel like Porsche needs to kind of just dust things off and be like, okay, we're gonna, you know, this is not something everyone would want. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll immediately see why, because it's not especially attractive, but also there's something very eye-catching about it. It's like a magic eye painting. If you're from the 90s, those paintings that you would look at, and you'd have to like uncross your eyes to find the sailboat in. It's essentially that of car interiors.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking that very same thing. And I was also thinking, I really don't want to look at that every day or every other day. So maybe a little bit of retro in some areas. Okay. Let's not do that though. I'm not really, that's part of the 80s. That should probably be left in the 80s. Sorry, Bruce.
Okay. That's fair. That's totally fair.
But I know there are some other designs out there.
Totally.
And I totally wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more of that coming back for interiors. I mean, automakers,
well, they're almost touching on that with the Sport Classic and also the previous gen, that kind of that tight checked pattern, whereas this is kind of a more, I guess, an abstract version. It's still a black and white check. It's just, it kind of goes weird visual ways, whereas as opposed to being a very tightly integrated look.
Interiors, they have come a long way. I mean, in the last decade, especially. I still wouldn't mind seeing a bit more variety in some cars, though. Sure. Bringing a little bit of that back, I think would be a fairly simple play for automakers to do that could help them stand out in the crowd a little bit more.
Yep. So we have just a few minutes for our news segment. So I just wanted to hit this real quick. This is not a huge thing. So we found out Nissan Z pricing for Japan. And unfortunately, both for the United States and Japan, it is being delayed. It's not too much of a delay. It'll be later in the summer rather than, I believe they were originally supposed to start coming in June. Yeah, they were originally supposed to start coming in June. It's going to be later in the summer. They didn't say why, other than the expected kind of supply driven issues, which every automaker is kind of facing right now. So you got to wait a little bit longer to get your Z. The other thing about it, so in Japan, prices start at, let me find it, 5,241,000 yen. Current exchange rates, that's $41,881. We had always heard the Z was going to be about $40,000 to start. So right in line with what we were expecting. So nothing big there, but if you wanted a new Z, you got to wait a little bit longer.
And let me point out too, I mean, we're basing this on conversion rates.
Sure.
Pricing when a vehicle comes to the US, I mean, there are also various factors that will affect the price here. So this is not, we're not saying this is going to be 41,000 in the States.
Oh, gotcha.
That's what we're looking at for exchange rates right now. Yeah. But it does fall in line with what we've heard. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but I mean, that with 400 horse, I mean, if it's around that price, that would undercut the Super by quite a margin, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Not? Yeah.
For especially the 3-liter Super, especially. Yeah. That would be, yeah.
I'm super excited to see what Nissan comes out with for the actual pricing in the States. I'm really into this car. I'm still probably going to get a GR Corolla, to be honest, but
I would too. Just, you know, the four doors on the GR. Yeah, I would too, yep. But I'm happy this exists. I think this is an attractive car. I've said that before. I wish it had a new engine in it. I wish it wasn't essentially that older Infiniti engine.
I don't care though. It's an upgrade from the 370
totally.
That they let wither on the vine. And I know there are still some people that are critical on the new Z saying, well, it's just an updated 370. Well, I think it looks really good. It has a great interior. That engine is going to be fun. And if they do keep it, similar to the pricing structure in Japan, it's going to be hard to find a reason to not buy one if you're looking for a fun performance car in that genre.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a shrinking genre. We know that. And props to Nissan for trying to stick it out here for a little while longer. Mm-hmm. Who knows how much longer we're going to have cars like this. So,
yep. Bravo. I know we saw our pals at Inside EVs, which we're all under the same umbrella. They had a story, I think within the past week or so, that Nissan wants to do an electric sports car. Not saying that's the next gen Z or anything like that, but it definitely, for a purely combustion powered sports car, the days are getting numbered. You know, you got to admit that. So if this is the way things have to go out, then this is an okay way for things to go out.
And Honda, if you're listening, and I know Honda listens, before internal combustion goes away, we need one more dance with an S2000 with a silly high revving 4-cylinder engine.
Well, you saw that CR that sold for $200,000,
Honda, a 2009 Honda S2000 CR. Granted, it only had 123 miles. You can go to MotorOne.com to see the article there. It sold for $200,000. And that car was like 39 or 40 grand a little over 10 years ago. The S2000.
Probably less than that. Probably.
Being the CR, I mean, it was actually the CRs were a little bit more stripped out. The one that sold had the optional stereo.
Right.
No, no, not the optional 10 speaker stereo, just the optional stereo.
Right.
It had the CR optional was the air conditioning
that came at right. the very right. end of production. It had those cool nacelles on the back. They yep. were a neat car. Like I saw them before. So real quick, Mid Ohio, which is the racetrack I always went to. Honda is in Marysville. Mid Ohio is in Lexington, Ohio. They're it's less than an hour. So a lot of times Honda stuff would end up at Mid Ohio. And so I saw them there and they were always super cool cars, but it was just amazing to see one sell for six figures. Not that long after, like less than a decade, right? Yep. After production ended.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a shocking number. It shows the S2000s are only going up in value. I should have bought one. What was it? It's been about 10 years since I had my 03 Cobra. I was shopping between either wanted that or an S2000. Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting the 03 Cobra because I found a nice one that was close by to me first. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should have went for the S2000.
Well, I remember.
Because I ended up selling the Cobra. And I don't know if I would have sold the S2000. But prices for S2000s have just been going up and up and up since then. The Cobras, they've gone up a little bit. They're still holding fairly steady. Nice ones, like high 20s, low 30 range. Up a little bit more from when I bought one. But mm-hmm. the S2000s, they have really gone up. So Honda, build us a new one before it's too late. Uh-oh, Bruce, I think we're having some technical difficulties here. So while Bruce is having some technical difficulties, are you with me, Bruce?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now you're back.
Okay, yeah, I had some weird stuff there too. I don't know, I've got some weird thing on my...
My
connection is unstable, which is a first.
There's a ghost behind you. I can see it in the window. What's going on there? Honestly, Martin, Martin is
our
awesome,
producer.
Is the awesome producer who edits these up. I don't know if you're going to edit that out or not. It's kind of funny. I don't actually see a ghost behind you though, Bruce.
Okay. Yeah. It's back now. I don't know what happened there. I guess we just had a little internet drop out here in Ohio. So
that's Honda listening in on us.
Yeah. Apparently saying, Honda's down in Marysville. Shame on you.
We don't want anybody thinking about a new S2000. So we're going to shut these guys down.
Exactly. Okay. Anyway, so some letters for us.
We had a very, very, very busy conversation last week. So we didn't have a chance. To get to any reader comments. So we're going to do some reader comments here right now. We'll try to cover the last couple weeks of podcasts here. We're going to start from last week's show where we were talking about stuff from New York. And we had quite a bit of response on the new BMW 7 series. So Harf of Jar, regular commenter, we appreciate you. Says the new 7 series in that frozen black looks like Darth Vader's personal daily. Not necessarily wrong there.
He's right.
It just needs some red backlighting in the kidney grills. Okay. We just went from Darth Vader to Michael Knight. Just like that, right?
You're right. Yeah, technically you're right.
I think we talked about it quite a bit last week. That the new 7 series with it's love it or hate it design.
So we kind of talked about this last week, but the longer I look at the new 7 series, the more I like it. And I really hope that design trickles down to the new 5 and eventually the new 3 series. I like it.
I don't know that I want it to trickle down. I definitely like it a little bit more now that I've had a little bit of time to get used to it. Uh-huh. And it's interesting that just about everybody we've talked to says, it looks great in black. It's like, well, that's what hides a lot of the other body details, especially on the front end, which is perhaps a bit telling there. Just another confirmation, you know, maybe BMW is doing something right here. Maybe we've all been a little bit too harsh on their design. Time is going to tell on that, right? Totally. Time is going to tell. Listeners know that I've always been pretty critical of BMW's design language. I still think they are over designing cars, especially in the front end. I still think it's too busy of a design. You can still be bold and not have so many different angles going in so many different directions at the same time. But 7 Series, yeah, possibly going in the right direction here. Josiah, regular commenter, says BMW continues to be a confusing brand to me. The 7 Series and the i7 are both miserable looking vehicles for the price point. I don't get how a car enthusiast who doesn't look at the badge would buy any modern BMW save for the M3, M4.
I don't know. That's an example you should give, Josiah. That's...
He continues, they simply aren't near the top anymore. For the X Series SUVs, you simply now can get a Genesis, Porsche, Land Rover, and many other premium SUVs that will annihilate the BMW in an overall comparison, possibly. Maybe. Even the design is broken, and the grille isn't the only culprit. Most new BMWs have a very interesting, better or worse front and rear, but the side profile is often bland, which leads to a disconnected overall look. Let's focus on the end of his comment. And thanks, Josiah, for the comment as always, because I found that to be an interesting point that maybe I hadn't considered before. When you look at a BMW in profile, they do tend to look pretty typical. I mean, how many times have we said, oh, you know what? From this angle, it looks fine. But then as you come around to the front, oh, okay. I mean, what do you think on that? Is there a disconnect going on there between very dramatic front ends, somewhat dramatic rear ends, and just
I would agree with you in general that has been the case in the past. I'm pulling up a picture as I talk to you here, a good flank shot that I'm looking for. I would say with the new 7 Series, that is not necessarily the case. I think it actually looks really, really good when you look at it from the side. It's got really sharp angular lines. Okay, for anyone watching, oops, press the wrong button again because I'm a moron. For anyone watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see it here. Here is the new 7 Series from the side. And I actually kind of like that. It's very sharp. It does have, if you look at the front, the way things move, you can still see these details from the front grille. Yep.
I was about to say that. You still get a taste of the front in a pure side profile on the 7 Series.
I would say the new 7 Series is maybe breaking ground in that direction. I love these very sharp taillights that wrap around the side. They almost look like a dagger or a knife or something like that. Like, I think it's an attractive car. That being said, I agree that earlier BMWs for the last generation or so have been kind of anonymous from the side, but I think the 7 Series might be breaking that mold.
Could be. And maybe that will be, maybe that would be a good thing if it trickled down to the M3, M4, because the M4 especially is what I was thinking about when I was reading the end of Josiah's comment there. If you look at an M4, just straight from the side or even just, you know, a little bit from the rear, it doesn't look particularly exciting, does it?
Why don't you vamp
but if you catch it from the front, I mean, obviously it's got the big grill there that people are still debating. I think our managing editor Brandon Turk has said it best. He's just like, you know, I'm tired of the debate. This is the style, and we're gonna go from here.
And so here is a 4 Series from the side. If you're watching, it is kind of anonymous.
It's not completely anonymous. It has
the scallops. A very classic sports coupe shape.
It has the scallops there in the fender.
You have a very short rear end. You have got sloping roof. Like, it's not bad, but it's also not doing anything new for that genre of vehicles.
And it's not nearly as dramatic as you would expect it to be if you looked at the vehicle from the front.
Here's the front end, and it's just got grill for days.
Honestly, it's not just the grill. If you could jump back, Bruce, to the front here. Here's my big critique of BMW styling right now. How many different contrasting angles do you have going on up there right now?
Sure. You've got
one here, three, four, five, six, seven, eight,
one here.
You got nine. You know, it's just, it's way too busy. It's way too busy. I think the grill is there and I think I can accept it and I can even embrace it to a degree, because when you look in BMW's past, that was the grill, big, sure, long vertical grill. So it's not like they're going in just a completely new direction. It's just there's too much going on at once there. If that was simplified, I think that would be a lot better. But yeah, when you look at the front, then you look at the side, you'd expect the side to be the profile to be a little bit more dramatic.
You could borderline say it's Mustang-esque. Like,
you're not wrong.
I feel like you could put a Mustang next to it and you would see a lot of similarities. I'm not saying that Ford or that BMW ripped off Ford. That's not what I'm saying.
Nope.
I'm just saying that in terms of just general aesthetics, there's a lot of sports coupe there.
And
when you look at it from the front, it's like, oh my God, you have the face of a monster. You just have these huge teeth out front like that no other vehicle has.
And I think I've even seen some commenters mention a connection between Mustang and M4 from time to time. So it's interesting that you point that out. No, Josiah, very good point. Thanks for the comment as always. Let's see here. Going back a couple weeks ago, we were talking about another possibly polarizing BMW, the new X7, and Harf of Jar had something to say there as well. I don't mind how the X7 facelift looks, to be honest. It's certainly an improvement over the pre-facelift, which looked like a scaled up X5 with not so great proportions. I think the shock of the XM concept has softened the blow of the reaction to the design on this. Agreed that it definitely looks better with the D-chrome trim and darker colors rather than the chintzy look of the non-M sport cars. Love the show, guys. Keep it up. Thank you very much for commenting as always. Bruce, our take on the X7 is kind of similar to the 7 series in that the more we look at it, the more we kind of like it. But I think I still like the 7 series, the sedan is growing on me quicker than the X7. What's your take?
Totally. Yeah, totally. The X7 I can get behind, especially like you said, as I see it in more colors and more angles. The X7, it's harder to do that. It's just so much. I don't say this a lot, but it's almost overstyled. There's so much styling on this car. There's so many much sculpting, so many like embossed sections, so many recessed sections. It's just a lot of car, and it's hard for me to like it. It's just like they threw every idea at the wall and they came up with the XM.
So how many different angles should we use? Yes.
Yeah, all of them.
Pretty much it. Well, let's do one more BMW commenter here. Al Mincer from a couple weeks ago. Just a really quick comment. So, is BMW becoming a fancy Hyundai?
Oh, I responded to this. I said he was being unfair. Like, no, they're not.
With the split lights?
No. I'm still, like, no, it's, they're it, not. Like it's still BMW, and I'm not saying anything against Hyundai. Hyundai makes a fantastic product. Genesis makes a fantastic product, which is, for anyone who's not familiar, Genesis is Hyundai's luxury division, a la Toyota, Lexus, Honda Acura, stuff like that.
Right.
But no, I disagree.
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of that split design, but they're unique in their own ways, but thank you for commenting. We appreciate the comments.
Totally. I love your comments. Yeah.
Let's go through one email here that's not BMW related. This came just this week. Did I write down who this is from? Bruce, can you vamp for me a little bit? Because I want to make sure this particular person gets credited, because it's a great email on the ID Buzz.
Oh, I do remember this email. This was a good one. Yeah. Smith and I, the ID Buzz is a super interesting vehicle. I was just writing about it today, and I didn't realize until I wrote this story how many variations of the ID Buzz are coming. So we know Europe is getting the short wheelbase, eventually getting the long wheelbase. In the US, we'll get the long wheelbase. But there's also Volkswagen Commercial Vehicles is working on two versions, that there's going to be the cargo version for commercial purposes, that there's going to be the California version for as a camper, that they're working on an autonomous version that's going to be a robo-taxi that's going to start out in Hamburg and then eventually proliferate elsewhere. Like, there's going to be a lot of ID buzz in general going around. It's not just going to be the van that we've been seeing so far.
And I can't wait to see it here in the United States. Jonathan Brown, thank you for sending in the email. Jonathan says, another great show, guys. The VW ID buzz can be relatively slow compared to other present electric vehicles. VW should concentrate on mileage. Frugality was a mainstay of the original VW bus. It was originally inexpensive to purchase, had 36 horsepower, took forever to accelerate, but got good mileage from a tank of fuel. The new VW ID Buzz should offer a stripper version to offer a really low purchase price, then allow certain packages to increase the pricing, etc. VW needs a winner in sales to stay relevant. The ID seems a little bland, where this ID Buzz should be cool, minimize electric drain by stunting acceleration if need be. A 67 VW bus probably did 0 to 60 in over 20 seconds. No reason the ID Buzz needs to hit 60 before 11 seconds. Fun show, guys. Thank you, Jonathan, for the comment. He's talking about kind of what we were talking about last week with the Buzz being not necessarily winning the hearts of people because it's electric, but just because it's a cool, iconic vehicle. And there's some good points here. Could BMW dial down the output of the battery and still have buyers happy? You know, dial down the power going to the motors to preserve battery life, to give it better range. What do you think on that, Bruce?
So it just so happens, Jonathan, you might be reading Volkswagen's mind, at least in Europe. We have no sign so far this is coming to the US, but there's allegedly a pure model of the Buzz coming that will have a smaller battery. Presumably, if you're going to fit a smaller battery, you would probably detune the motors. I'm not sure about that, but basically smaller battery, less price, because the battery is the kind of the major thing that causes the price to increase in terms of EVs, because it's very expensive. So at least in Europe, there, you might actually have that. You might have a cut price version of the Buzz with a smaller battery that would do exactly what you're saying. Are we getting it in the US? Certainly not at first. The one in the US, they're kind of, what we've heard so far is it's kind of be the exact opposite of that. It's going to have a larger battery. It's going to have a longer wheelbase. Some people, depending on who you talk to, it might have dual motors. It might still be a single motor system, something like that. But I don't know whether the US is going to get this, but VW does see the desire for a simpler Buzz. And that does at least appear to be happening in other markets.
I think what he's talking about also, though, is, a smaller stripped down version, with fewer options, but also a version where you keep the larger battery. You just dial down the power output to the motor. So instead of 201 horsepower, you dial it down to, like 140 or so. Even that would be a fast improvement over the original bus with regards to acceleration. I would need to talk to an EV pro. We would need to have Tom Malogny back on here to get a really good understanding, or Kyle Connor to get a really good understanding, of the implications on that. But we also have to consider this is 2022. I think a very, very slow VW bus was certainly more acceptable to a select audience 40 and 50 years ago. Right. I don't think modern buyers overall would be that accepting of something that's basically that.
I agree. It also becomes a safety issue, because it's not whether a vehicle, it's not how slow a vehicle is, it's the delta between the fastest vehicle that they're going to encounter and the slowest vehicle that they're going to encounter. encounter. And if you're on the road and everything else is accelerating in 7 seconds, something like that, to 60, if you are taking 15 seconds, then you almost become a hazard on the road to everyone else. That,
right. And I don't think, I mean, even if you dialed the horsepower down to like 120, I mean, I still don't think it would be quite that slow. But yeah, I mean, at different times, but it's an interesting point. I think it's totally an interesting point, and totally, we certainly appreciate the email. What interesting points do you have to share with us, everybody? Comment on our YouTube videos that go up every Friday at Motor One Podcast, the channel on YouTube. Go there, like, follow, subscribe. Follow, like, and subscribe again. Follow, like, yes, and subscribe again. Keep going.
That's right.
Keep doing it, because we are growing. We're growing slowly. We appreciate you. You also can go to our website, motorone.com, comment on the post that goes up every Friday that gives you a little bit of a synopsis of the podcast. If you don't have a chance to listen to it right away, you can kind of get a preview of what we're talking about. You can always comment there. And of course, you can email us at podcast@motorone.com. And we always read those emails. We always appreciate them. And now, Bruce, as I understand, and I say as I understand because here in my little home in Western South Dakota, we had a blizzard last weekend. There is a winter storm watch recently posted just this afternoon for the Black Hills, which I am right on the edge of. Yeah, I finally got the Mustang running right. I finally switched over the distributor. It starts up. It runs great. I'm just yearning to get out for a weekend drive because I'm putting in probably these days, I'm probably putting in at least 9 or 10 hours every day here in my little office. It makes it a little tough to get on the evenings. I am crying, folks, for a nice weekend little getaway, a nice multi-hour drive in the convertible with the top down. And it was a blizzard last weekend. It's going to be rain and snow and 40 degrees this weekend. I need some imaginary summertime fun. And that brings us to this week's Cheap Car Challenge. Bruce, tell us all about it.
That's right. For us in non-apocalyptic parts of the country.
I hate you.
Because it was 70 here Saturday and Sunday. Like, it was very nice. I went and visited my parents, and we were sitting outside on their porch for many hours because it was so nice. It was literally like the first day of spring. And
yep,
honestly, we've had like bizarre snow and crap here, so like no judgment, but it's finally starting to be spring here. And so I suggested this to you. I initially said convertibles. You came back to me saying any sort of open top vehicle. So whether it's a T-top or a Targa or just a vehicle with a particularly large sunroof.
Anything that'll let in the fresh air and the sun that you can go out for a summertime romp and just have a nice, enjoyable
fresh air.
Doesn't have to be fast.
No.
But if you can get some fresh air and a little bit of sun, that's always good for the soul, right?
Yep. And we've got a $6,000 price limit. That's where we're putting the price
and
limit.
And maybe we should have upped that a little bit. This is something we were talking about before.
I said 5,000. You came back to me and said 6 grand. So 6 grand's where it's at.
Well, if I remember correctly, we did a very similar cheap car challenge around this time last year.
Roughly a year ago. Pretty close.
Here comes summer. Here comes warmer weather. Let's find some cheap convertibles. And I tell you, this time around, it is noticeably different. Searching far and wide the used car arena, it is tough to find even modestly decent cars under our $6,000 limit. Never mind $5,000. Times have definitely changed. I have to tell everybody, one of the reasons, Bruce, I said I brought up T-tops is because I really just wanted to find another 300, a Z31, 300 ZX T-top.
You're not going to find one of those.
And I that doesn't exist. And not only that, but I found a whole bunch that were like 14 and 15 grand.
No.
Yes. Yes. So the people listening to the podcast.
Like that's been a $6,000 car for years.
The secret is out. People are starting to pick up the Z31s. I got to find something new. So anyways, we have our cheap car challenge. Bruce and I both have a bunch of cars.
Yeah, we both. Yeah.
who do you want to go first, or would you like me to go first? The option is yours.
I'll go first. So I'm gonna go. I have four cars saved here that I found. I'm going to go with the most realistic one, not the one that I want the most. I will show you that in a second, but the one that I want the most, I'm a little scared by the seller. So I will go with the most realistic one, and that is a 1999 Volkswagen Cabrio on a set of orange wheels. It appears to be in like fine condition. Like looking at it, you know, the orange wheels, that's fine with that. These cars were never fast, but it is a convertible.
81,000 miles?
81,000 miles on it, which is just stupid low for a vehicle of that age. It's an automatic, so my wife could drive it. It's got the, what do they call it? The basket handle. That's what they call the roll hoop, because it's got that kind of weird thing in the middle. Aftermarket radio, but it looks fine. It's got aftermarket seat covers, which I don't care. Hopefully whatever's underneath them isn't too bad. But, you know, it's not going to be fast, but if you want a convertible, I am well under our $6,000 limit. $4,250? Yeah, sure.
That's for that mileage? That's not bad. I would love to.
It's not a performance car. It's not. You're never going to be like sporty, but
the wheels would have to go so quickly.
I kind of like them
so quick. No, don't say that.
I kind of like them.
Nope. Don't. The wheels have to go. Orange. Yes. Orange is not the new black. not in this case. If they weren't orange, okay. You know what? Bomb them like gunmetal or. Or sure. Go bronze. There you go. Go with a nice deep bronze. That'll be okay.
Yeah, those wheels are not orange. Someone spray painted those wheels. Like that. Right. That's not natural color for them.
That was not an option on Volkswagens here.
No. But like that's a fine car, especially for the money. Like
money, it's got you know the little kind of rolly bar thing there. It looks good.
Yeah.
And you know it wouldn't be fast. No. It's not a GTI or anything, but no. I know that would still be fun to just get up to speed and just keep the speed there and just go from corner to corner. It would still be
or if you lived
nimble and fun to drive.
Or if you were just cruising around the city. So this car is located in Columbus. If you were on High Street or something like that in Columbus, you throw the top down, you roll around the university, you roll around kind of the restaurants and stuff around there. Like this would be fine for that. It it's not sporty. It's just a cruiser. And for $4,250, that's all you would want. Again, this is not my favorite. I will show you my favorite in a second. And I will note why my favorite is kind of scary to me, but Smith, your turn.
I don't know that I have a favorite here on mine. I'll start with the one that's probably pretty predictable because I sort of already own it and I've been a proponent of
so it's just another Mustang.
I've been a proponent of these for a few years here now. This is a 1994 Mustang GT convertible. If you want a cheap car, the SN95s are still a pretty good way to go right now.
Yeah. I found one.
They haven't jumped up in value too much, although they have jumped since the last time I looked. So, you know, I've been off again, on again, thinking about selling my car. Maybe I'm just going to hold on to it for a while because these cars are getting, I mean, mine's 27 years old and 95. So this is 28 years old. They're getting up there to the point where they're going to start getting some value. So, okay. The pictures don't really zoom in very closely. Let me see if I can
just
in a little
show
bit.
Us the other angles is what I'm saying.
I mean, it's a 94 Mustang GT right under the price point, $59.99. This is a 5-speed manual car. Okay. It's going to have the 5-liter V8s the last year for the 5-liter V8. Let me see if I can get a little bit better here on the photos. There's no information on the car, which is a little spooky. It's for sale down in Colorado. So it's actually a day's drive away from me. It's actually sort of in my area. It's got a flat black paint job. It's got hood pins. It's not stock, which makes it a little scary. And as I look at the engine here, I know these cars pretty well. That actually has an intake from a later Ford Explorer, a later 1990s Ford Explorer. That's a common mod because the Explorer had a pretty much the same intake, but it was a GT40 style intake. So it's a common mod to yank that off the Ford Explorer, bolt it onto the 5-liter Mustang GTs, get a little bit more power. So it's got an upgraded intake. It actually has the same BBK mass airflow sensor that I have on mine. So it's not entirely stock. I don't know what else might be done to it, but I mean, it looks decent overall. It looks like the vents in the hood are kind of gone. I mean, it's definitely murdered out a little bit. It's got the old Hurst aluminum T-handle shifter in there. That's going to burn your hand as soon as you touch it. But it does have the black and tan interior, and mine is just black, and I rather like the black and tan. Although it's got some, I always get a little nervous when I see kind of sketchy seat covers on a car. And this has sketchy you seat should. Covers. It has the little pine tree really air freshener. It looks like the top has a little bit of damage. It's not a perfect car, but for under $6,000, it's a V8 5-speed convertible. It's going to make nice noise if you're very, very interested in that sort of thing. It's not going to be super fast, but it's not going to be slow either. It's got a nice little torque bump to it. It's probably a car that you're looking at it. You're not going to want to drive it in the rain because that top looks a little questionable. But yeah, 94, 95 was the last year for the old pushrod 5.0 Mustangs. And I think these are going to be going up in value considering this thing is $6,000. And mine is in considerably better shape. I don't know. Maybe mine's gone up a little bit. But yeah, well, I mean that's my predictable choice. Those cars are, you can still find them.
This is not my pick, by the way. So, but I will share it with you because this is a car that I found. It is a 95 Mustang GT convertible in white. It's actually a little bit less expensive than yours. It's $5,300. It's located in Toledo. It's not perfect. The seller notes that apparently the power seats don't work, so he put it in the location that works for him, and that's where the seat is. It also clearly has these aftermarket taillights.
Mm-hmm. Actually, but, yeah, those are aftermarkets. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, but it's clean, and for $5,300, like if, you know, for not a lot of wrenching, you could have this being a decent car. It's got the 302 in it, 215 horsepower. Like is
that an automatic or? It looks like it said automatic in there.
Yes, it is an automatic.
That's the one thing that would hang me up here. These cars have a very, very different dynamic, in my opinion. When you go when you go with the automatics versus the manuals, the gearing just isn't quite as crisp. But again, V8 convertible, moderate performance, nothing to write home about, but nothing to sneeze at either.
Yep.
They're kind of in that sweet spot, and I think they're starting to exit that sweet spot. So now might be the chance to get one of those. Bruce, totally. go on with your regular
car that scares me.
Okay.
And I'm going to zoom in, and can you tell me why these images scare me?
Because they were taken on May 20th, 2021?
Yeah. They're a year old. Why? In a Craigslist post that you put up 7 days ago, would you put up images from a year ago?
Because those are the pretty images. I've been guilty of that. If the car doesn't look that much different, I'll just go ahead and use older images.
But don't put the date on the images.
Where's the location? Where is this located at?
So this is in Ravenna, Ohio, which is literally next town over from my parents. If I was at my parents, I could be in Ravenna within 5 minutes.
Okay. I mean, the car could be in storage still. Maybe they didn't take it out of storage yet if they stored it. Obviously, that's a nice green. I mean, these pictures look like they probably tried to sell it last year and didn't have any offers.
I think you're right.
So we'll just run the pictures again. But it's a 2003 Saab 9.3 SE convertible.
Yes, it is. At $5,000. So in our price range, it would be, I could PayPal the money to my dad and own it tomorrow if I wanted to. I don't. You know, it's a very nice looking Saab. I know you're not a Saab guy. Me and Jeff Perez that we work with, I love a Saab.
I like the older ones. I don't really like the GM era Saab.
That's fine.
The pre-GM, the 900s, yes.
But this is the 2-liter turbo. This would be a very fun car. It's an automatic, 133,000 miles. Parts. So I should say my mother had a Saab 9.3 much later than this. I believe hers was an 09. And she ran into the problems once Saab went out of business that she couldn't get parts for it. And she loved that car. And the only reason she got rid of it was that she couldn't get parts for it anymore. So, and I don't know what it's like with this model because, you know, it's much earlier than the one that she had. But convertible, I can say I drove her 9.3 several times. It was fantastic. That turbo, yeah, it's only a 2-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder, but the gearing or something about that, it was a perfect highway cruiser. You just like, you put your foot down a little bit and you pass the guy or the semi truck in front of you. I'm not saying it was a speed demon or anything like that. It was just whatever gearing or turbo setup or whatever it was just, you just went like it was effortless. And so I love a Saab. $5,000, well within our price range. I'm scared that the photos are from a year ago, but you know, assuming everything is fine since then, I'm on.
Yeah.
Board.
I don't know that I would be afraid that the photos are a year old. I would actually go into the negotiation thinking, okay, it looks like these photos were sale photos that were taken in 2021. I'd be using that to my advantage. I'd ask right up front. So yeah, I noticed the photos were from last year. Were you trying to sell it last year?
Yeah.
And you know, use that to my advantage. If they've been trying to sell it for a year, maybe they want it gone. Okay. Ready for my next one here. This is going to be the one. I don't know that this is my favorite. I would definitely have this over the Mustang. And I suspect it might be a surprise to you, maybe to people, because it's an X90.
Oh, wait, there we go.
It is a 1996 Suzuki X90 four-wheel drive, 5-speed manual with removable T-tops for $5,150. It is a little far away for me. It's in Oregon. That would be one hell of a day trip for me. But in college, I actually worked at a Suzuki dealership. They sold Suzukis, Lincolns, Mitsubishis, and BMWs. So I was working at the dealership when these things came out. And I thought they were just kind of neat and fun then. And I mean, this one is in pretty good shape. It was towed behind a RV, so you know, hopefully there aren't any issues in the driveline. It sounds like that the seller knew what they were doing when they were towing with it. But yeah, I mean, it's like 95 horsepower, just a little 2-seater four-wheel drive runabout. I would take it and put some off-road tires on it and just, you know, drive it anywhere the hell I wanted to go without any T-tops in, of course. The one thing that concerns me, as we're looking at this photo here of the engine, I see a different color under the hood.
Oh yeah, you're right.
It looks like it's maybe like the burnt orange color.
Even that, the fenders
that,
look
that,
red.
That I recall. Overspray.
I'm zooming in.
Yep. Yeah. So at some point it's been painted white. The Craigslist ad says that it has a clean title, so I don't really know what to think about that. T-tops, 5-speed, 149,000 miles, 4-wheel drive, high, low range. It's got the 1.6 liter, newer tires, aluminum wheels. Doesn't have air conditioning. I don't care. It's the T-tops. I'm not going to drive this through the winter. Although I do recall driving some of these at the dealership I worked for, which in Kalamazoo, Michigan. That was right sort of in the Lake Michigan snow belt. And there were a few times where we got 12, 14, 15 inch snowfalls. And you could get into one of those things with a four wheel drive, start it up and just move it. It was small. It would just go right through the snow, even without the regular snow tire. So good in the snow. Great rear car for anything except more than one passenger. Does have large trunk, locking gas door, which could save money. They're trying. it does say here in the description, it was red and it's white now. So,
and I gotta say, you're in good company. Former guest, hopefully future guest, because if anyone's seen it, he's got a book coming out. Myron Vernus owns an X90, so he's got his dog.
Yes,
Cosmo.
He does.
In his X90.
So. Those wheels are so much better.
Well, they are.
Those wheels and tires are so much better.
But still, you're in good company if you pick that.
Yep. Bruce, let's do one more because I have one more that I have to get to. Do you have one more real quick?
I do have one more. Yeah.
Let's do one more.
Yep. This is not my favorite. This was kind of my runner up. It's kind of my third favorite. But it's fulfills everything. This is a 1987 Cadillac Elante with 61,000 miles, $5,700 in Sterling Heights, Michigan. You can see the body doesn't look like it's perfect, but it checks all the boxes. It is a convertible for less than $6,000. And it's interesting because if anyone knows about these cars, as I recall, they were shipped between the United States, Italy. If I recall, they were shipped multiple times between various places. I believe the bodies came from Germany or France, and then
I can't remember specifically, but
Italy,
yeah, it was,
or Pininfarina did the bodies. The powertrain came from, I think, Opel, and then they were shipped to the U.S. for final. It was something like that. Like,
it was Cadillac. They were
a ton of money,
extremely expensive. It was Cadillac trying to be Maserati.
Yeah,
front wheel drive V8.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely neat, but yeah, they kind of didn't. They weren't a big hit. I've been able to drive a couple of these over the years. I mean,
they're interesting. It comes with the hard top and the stand for the hard top. Like, ooh. This owner like has everything and is still only asking $5,700 for it. So, you can't fight that. It's not maybe in the best of shape, but it does seem like it has an owner that loved it. So
I tell you what, Bruce, that would be a fun car to take to Radwood. To a Radwood event, that would get a lot of it. I don't know that it would get much attention. Well, it would get attention. I don't know if it would get the kind of attention that you want elsewhere. But at Radwood, that thing would just be cool as hell. All right.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, speaking of Radwood, let me get to the one that I think I like this most of the three that I found.
You're saving the best for last. I'm curious.
I did. And honorable mention, the answer is always Miata when you're talking cheap convertible. And I did find
find a Miata in my area for our price range. They're going up in price quickly.
They are. They were tough. The ones I found were right up at the limit and maybe not the best. Possibly an alternative. I did find a few BMW Z3s from the mid-90s that were coming in under the limit. Most of them
that
were the four-cylinders.
If you get it with that, is such a dog. You got to get it with the inline
six. I found one with six.
Okay.
That looked pretty decent. That was just under the price range. So they are out there. But I'm a V8 guy, so I got to go with the Pontiac Firebird formula.
Oh, those are fantastic. Especially the late 90s version with the different front fascia.
This is the 1989 Pontiac Firebird. Yep. It does have T-tops, which I adore. Also, this has the 350 V8. This doesn't have the 305. A lot of the Firebirds had the 305. This one has the 350. So, I mean, it's going to have a little bit more power. The 305s were kind of, on it. I think it looks pretty good. It's odd that it doesn't have a rear spoiler. The description says that the exterior looks good, but the interior is in pretty rough shape. But I mean, it's got the cool original Pontiac wheels. It looks a little grimy under the hood. Well, I take that back. It looks like the dealership power washed the hell out of it before they took the photos. So, I mean, I can see it's been a little neglected probably under there. T-tops, we could see a little bit of paint coming off around the T-tops. This car is for sale in Illinois, so it's a stretch for a day's drive for me. And we can see in some of these images, yeah, the paint doesn't look that great. The motors for the headlights don't work. They do say it does need some work. I mean, they're honest in the ad. It does need some TLC. But it's at $5,990. About as close to our limit as you can get. And this is another car where I was trying to find, you know, a T-top that would be fun under the limit. And it's hard to find the Firebirds. These are definitely going up as well.
Totally.
It's an automatic. It's not a manual, which, you know, in this car, I guess that would be okay. Cause I always liked that generation Firebird with the T-tops, and to find one in the price range with a 350. If it needs some TLC, we'll do some TLC. It says that it runs and drives okay. So
at this price point, you almost have to expect whatever you're buying is going to need some love.
Right.
Like, you know, these days, $5,000-$6,000, it's not like, I mean, even like you were saying, even 5 years ago, you know, it's that you're kind of at the bottom end of whatever you're buying. So you're going to have to expect to put some money into it.
Well, what concerns me a little bit here is the ad does say that the interior is in rough shape. And then the only photo they give you is a close up of the speedometer. They mentioned that there's no headliner and that there's some other damage inside. I've done headliners before. It wouldn't be that bad, especially in a car with a T-top. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there you go. Two V8s and a freaking X90.
Those are good choices, man.
I can't complain too much on yours, except the orange wheeled Volkswagen. Get it, but get rid of the
wheel. Then paint them. Like, it was what, $4,750, something like that? Like, I am well under our budget. You can buy a $40
can of 40 bucks paint. In rattle can. There you go. There you go. Folks, do you have any cheap car challenges? Send us your picks for convertibles or T-tops under $6,000. If we get enough, we'll talk about it next week. I know we have a special guest coming next week, Bruce.
We do. We should have a automotive photographer with us next week. I will be confirming that. But yeah, we should have a photographer with us. But also, anyone, if you have any ideas for, like, because Smith and I, we try to figure out a genre for our cheap car challenges. So if there's a genre we haven't done or you think would be fun or you want to see again, let us know, because we'll do it again, because we both love shopping for cars.
Yeah, I hate looking for cars. Let me tell
exactly.
you.
But otherwise, yeah, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate all of our listeners. And like Smith said earlier, because he is the master of PR and marketing, that you need to subscribe to our show. You need to comment on our show. You need to like our show, thumbs up, whatever it is on whatever service that you're looking at. Please do that. But we appreciate you and we love it. So that's going to be the show for tonight. So bye-bye, everybody.
Take care. We'll see you.